Hi, and welcome back to Finding the Zen Within, an anger management podcast for men. My name is Jack Register, and I am your host. We're here today to talk about the addiction of rage and how rage can actually turn into an addiction, and what does that really look like from a myriad of perspectives. As we've said before, our podcast is not therapy. Our podcast is meant to be informational. If you're struggling with issues of anger management and wish to deal with this in a therapeutic way, reaching out to Therapy Den or Psychology Today or Open Path are all places where you can find professionals who would be willing to help you. And as always, if you're having feelings or thoughts of harming yourself or someone else or thoughts of suicide, please reach out to the National Suicide Hotline. It's a text message at 988. So today we're going to talk about the idea of rage as addiction. Within the 12-step world, if you've been a part of that at all, there are a myriad of 12-step groups for a little bit of everything, and there actually is Rageaholics Anonymous. And what they focus on is the idea that rage becomes an addictive pattern to the point where rage becomes the only way that someone knows how to respond. And what they do in that 12-step community is treat rage like a drug so that folks can develop the relationship with it to understand that it is separate from everything else around them and becomes something that they take into themselves as absolute truth. So I've got some thoughts today about how that happens with rage in general from different points of view, and some thoughts about what does this mean for folks who may actually get to a point where really understanding that they are a rageaholic might be a really important thing as a part of their healing process. So first of all, let's define rage and be really clear about that. Rage is when we become uncontrollable in our response, both behaviorally, psychologically, emotionally, verbally, and so on. When we lose the ability to understand what's happening around us. I have struggled with rage off and on in my life, and will say that from my own experience and what I've read in the literature and what I know as a therapist and coach is that some people will talk about a veil falling in front of their eyes where they just see nothing but red. And almost as if they go to sleep while they then respond physically, verbally, and so on. I personally had that experience myself, and we call those rage blackouts. They're really serious because they can actually exacerbate any underlying issues that are present and actually become so difficult that we actually see a personality change, or we see someone's behavior become so unreasonable that they actually become incredibly unsafe. You mix someone who's struggling with rage with alcohol or other drugs, and the response actually gets exacerbated by a factor of infinity. We can see folks go into an alcohol blackout and a rage blackout and basically show up as the Hulk in real time and just smash absolutely everything in sight. And my friends, those of us who know the consequences of how our anger has hurt other people know that's not who we want to be. We don't want to become somebody's monster because many of us are fighting those monsters that we've carried with us for years. And so rage addiction is a really serious issue. And separate from all of the legal consequences and the consequences of becoming unemployed or whatever else, the consequences we have on our family, the amount of trauma that this communicates to our family is incredibly difficult to sit with and to know that we are the cause of that. And so part of the healing process when you're dealing with anger management issues is to first get real about what's happening, right? We have to know the extent of the problem before we can even conceptualize a solution. So we have to start from scratch and go from where do we need to begin in order to better understand what's going on. So from a neurological perspective, scientific here, rage triggers the release of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, creating a physiological or body-based response. Over time, the brain may associate anger with dopamine, leading to a cycle where individuals seek out situations that provoke rage to replicate that emotional high. And basically, what we're saying here is rage becomes the drug because rage triggers the dopamine receptors in the brain, which is the warm and fuzzy hormone that we all are seeking. And so, in essence, some folks become intensity-seeking situations where they actually are looking for a moment where they can lose it or they can be pushed to the absolute edge so that that response happens. So, that's a really important thing to understand because that's really the science of addiction. And this becomes something that some folks are going to struggle with and say, well, we always have control over our response. We should always have control over our emotions. Folks like that don't understand the power of rage addiction. They've never actually, in some cases, or they're in denial of situations where they may actually get to a point where they just lose control and are unable to maintain it. What starts to happen here is a pattern of behavior where this really extreme response becomes normal. And this may show up as subtly as someone cutting you off in traffic, someone pulling into a parking space that you were waiting on, someone pushing ahead of you in the grocery store, and you become so infuriated and rageful that you are now targeting that person as if they are the absolute epitome of everything that you despise in the world. Now, the important thing to understand, my friends, is that when that happens, everyone in your life sees that response. And so for many of us who have struggled with rage and the consequences of rage, there is what we call the shame spiral afterwards. And that's a really important point that we're going to talk about more in the future. But what I want to say today about that is that shame is the consequence for not seeking out help. We actually get stuck in the quicksand of shame because we don't believe that we are allowed or worthy of getting help to fix this problem. Many of us who struggle with rage issues and with the addiction to rage issues grew up in situations where that was the only thing we saw modeled for us. And particularly as men who might have ideas of gender roles or ideas that I have to be the lone wolf, I have to figure it out on my own. Or if you're a comic book person and you remember the line out of the Avengers where the Incredible Hulk says as Bruce Banner, well, you know, I'm always a little angry. Here's the thing. Is that who you really want to be? Is that the man you want your children, grandchildren, partner, parents, friends, all of that? Is that the person you want them to remember you to be as always being a little angry? And I remember I had a moment where somebody really important to me said, I want to know you as the non-angry Jack, not as the man who's constantly fighting the world, trying to destroy everything in his path. And that was a bit of a wake-up call for me because this person loved me a lot, but said, I can't be around you whenever you're rageful because you're terrifying. And I had then realized I was becoming that person's monster. And so for me, that's always been sort of the rubric of, or the way in which I sort of stop myself when things really seem like they're getting out of control. Another perspective is a psychological one. Rage can serve as a coping mechanism for deeper emotional pain. Often stemming from trauma, individuals may unconsciously gravitate towards anger as it feels more empowering than sadness or vulnerability, reinforcing it as a primary response. Those of us who have traumatic histories or neglect histories or histories where we feel like we are not okay in the world for some reason or feel broken may use rage as the response for that because we don't want anyone to see our pain and we can't become vulnerable. Because if we're vulnerable, then that might mean that people may not think that we are man enough for the situation. And this is really where those toxic gender roles or this idea that I have to be strong no matter what, human beings are not meant to live that way. There's a big difference between being confident and strong in yourself and strong in your personality and as someone who's able to handle his life versus someone who actually uses pain and anger and projecting this onto other people as an expectation that they can't look too far behind the curtain because who's really behind there is a scared little boy who's been wounded so badly that all he knows how to do is to lash out. My friends, this is how generational patterns of abuse and neglect and actually passing on our rage to our sons and our nephews and our daughters and so on, this is how it gets passed on, is that we have a man who refuses to do his work and refuses to let people love him so that all they can do is fear him. If someone fears us, anger is going to be the response to us, not sympathy, not empathy, none of the emotions that we want to have people have to be able to build a different world. That becomes a really important point whenever we're trying to create change within families. From a behavioral perspective, the reinforcement of rage through immediate gratification, a feeling of being powerful or in control, can lead to habitual patterns. This cycle can create dependency as individuals may seek out scenarios that provide anger to maintain that sense of power. For a lot of folks, anger, rage, and power are synonymous. And this becomes and comes across as a domineering and dominating and conquering kind of thing, right? Where it's this philosophy of kill or be killed, right? These are folks who live in the world in such a way that it is really difficult for them to imagine the idea that there's plenty for everyone, that you don't have to hurt others in order to get ahead, that you can actually get your needs met and it be okay. For a lot of people, that's a very difficult concept to be able to take in as reality. From a cognitive point of view, ruminating thoughts or recurring or ongoing or intrusive thought patterns can perpetuate anger, as individuals may obsess over perceived injustices. This fixation can trap them in a cycle of rage, making it increasingly difficult to break free from anger-driven responses. From a cognitive perspective, basically, this intrusive thought is that little voice in the back of our head that's actually a combination of all the voices of our life, of all the people that we've known, the authority figures we've known, and the perceived authority figures, and what those folks are saying about us. When we start having a negative self-talk, what that's really indicative of is that our self-concept, or how we see ourselves, and our self-esteem, or the actions that we take to esteem ourselves, start to go into alignment, right? So what that really means in reality is, if I perceive myself as a broken bad guy and that everyone's out to get me, the actions I'm going to take are going to be incredibly defensive and offensive to others, which means slights, somebody pulling out in front of me, someone nearly cutting me off, someone pushing ahead of me at the grocery store. All of those things are going to be perceived injustices where I have to respond, which might mean that I'm going after someone who cut in front of me and I'm following them home. That's not only not okay, that's actually borderlining on illegal and could potentially become dangerous and actually someone getting hurt or even killed. And for a lot of folks who struggle with serious rage addiction issues, the consequences are never in the front of their mind. And so one of the things we do as a therapist and coach is to say, play the tape out to the illogical extreme. So if you do follow this person home and you do get all up in their cornflakes and say, hey, you did this to me, this isn't okay with me, what happens if they pull out a gun, right? Whoever's with you and has to experience that with you is now in that same dangerous situation with you. Or if you're on the interstate and someone cuts in front of you, you decide to speed up, or you become incredibly aggressive in your driving to the point where you put you and your passengers and other people around you at risk just to prove a point. And that's the really hard thing, is that that momentary flash of anger is so volcanic for a lot of men that thinking through what's realistically going to happen is almost impossible. And as we were talking about before, if that veil falls or if that sort of blackout occurs, consequences are not even on the radar. Everything is about a here and now orientation in the moment, to the point where whatever the consequences are whatever the consequences are. And this, my friends, is when things get really, really dangerous, because we could actually have someone lose their life or hurt someone unintentionally because of that. Another perspective is a social perspective, where rage can be socially reinforced, especially in environments where aggression is normalized or even celebrated. This can lead to a culture where anger is viewed as a viable form of expression, creating a sense of community around rage. And this is really hard for a lot of folks to understand, but we live in a violent culture. We live in a culture where it is completely appropriate to show on television or in other places if someone has a beef with somebody to go beat the tar out of them. Instead of thinking about the idea that, is that the way we really want to respond? There are 7 billion people on this planet. If you are incredibly angry at the world and you think that everybody's against you, it's not the world that's against you, it's you are against the world. And in a lot of ways, all this does is set you up for a life of misery and make it incredibly difficult for you to connect with any other human, because they're going to become the target of your anger. And again, because as we've talked about, it can actually get reinforced to the point where this is your normal, natural response state. You're now in a situation where you may actually respond only with rage, to the extent that no one wants to be around you, And then you have what we call in psychology a self-fulfilling prophecy, where what you believe about the world actually comes true because your actions have actually aligned with that belief to the point where everything comes true. Another important point of view is a cultural perspective. From a cultural point of view, certain cultures may valorize anger or hold it up as a badge of honor, seeing it as a sign of strength or assertiveness. This societal endorsement can encourage individuals to embrace their rage as a fundamental aspect of their identity. Some people would say that this is a part of the warrior culture, where men are supposed to constantly be ready for war and be ready to take folks out at all costs if they are considered enemy. Now, I am all for a culture of valor, of strength and whatnot, and protection and taking care of people who are vulnerable. I come from military folks. I'm a firm believer in the idea of service. I'm not a believer in the idea of conquest, because when we conquest, we actually create someone who becomes the target of that conquest who is no longer human. And that's a really different sort of space to be in. As one of my mentors in martial arts used to say, the idea is that we are training to fight because we train to protect. But if we have to fight, we fight to do the minimal amount necessary to bring peace to the situation, not to destroy the other person. This may run counter to where some men are with this idea, but if we really are going to understand the roots of anger management and the roots of rage, we have to understand that violence and rage go together, and that in a lot of our video games and our movies and all the ways we popularize this in our culture in the West, we have created a culture where it is absolutely normal to beat someone to a pulp to make a point. And my question is that the way we really want to show up? And my question for men who are struggling is that the way you want to be? Because the old adage is, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. Is that what you want the memory for your family to know? Is that what you want your son and daughter? Is that what you want your grandchildren to remember you by? Because our time on this planet is very short. And so, hopefully, in my view anyway, I want my life to be an expression of how can we leave things better than how we found them. So the issue here too is that when we start critiquing these perspectives, when we start really taking a and pulling them apart and saying, yeah, but maybe this isn't all of it. There's some other ideas that are in play here. Some of these perspectives oversimplify the complexities of the individual experiences of anger. Trauma is not a one size fits all, it's not monolithic, and each person's response is absolutely unique. And part of the grieving process and part of the process of understanding your anger is to do the grief work. And in grief, you must get angry at what happened in order to start to move past it. So, anger in and of itself is a motivating emotion for action. It is not necessarily a negative emotion. When anger moves to rage, is when we start to have problems, because rage becomes an extreme response that then becomes chronic to the point where the person can no longer be able to see the difference between being frustrated and being rageful. Another critique is neglecting healing pathways. Focusing solely on the addictive nature of rage can overlook the potential for healing and resilience. Many individuals can learn to manage their anger with support and with the actual work itself. And this work is on really getting underneath of what's the core of the issue. Many of us experience sort of a spectrum of emotion all at once. And in therapy language, we call this a dialectic, where you might have two separate emotions that are both absolutely true happening at the same time. So when I think about my relationship with my father, I feared my father and I respected him, but I was also furious with him all the time because of the ways in which he showed up in my life that I didn't feel like were affirming. I didn't feel like were helpful. I felt like all it was a way for him to be a bully. And as an adult, I got to a point where I was just done with constantly trying to figure out how to be the right kind of man for him to simply be my father and not someone I was competing with. And so, this idea that if we can focus on the healing journey, that allows us to see that anger can be a part of that without it having to move towards rage. We really don't want to pathologize. And that's another major critique, is that when we start to try and put these bigger sort of contextual windows or lenses around the issues of anger and rage, we risk pathologizing it. Labeling rage as an addiction risks pathologizing a natural human emotion. Anger, when expressed constructively, can be a healthy response to injustice. And this is something that's really important to hear and understand, because that also then leads into that there are certain groups of folks who have been marginalized because their voices seem rageful when what they're doing is expressing their emotions in an appropriate way. If someone is calling for justice around an issue, and those of us who are not affected by that issue look at them and say, oh my gosh, they're just being rageful and angry, and we don't have to listen to that, they're only expressing what they're feeling and experiencing in the only way we know how. And so part of the concern is that we have to be really careful that we don't use the idea of simply saying that rage can become addictive in an overarching way that we actually erase people's individual experience. So this is a lot to process. This is a lot to think about. So here's what I would say to you in terms of what to take away from this dialogue today. If you're someone who constantly struggles with your response, and you find yourself going from zero to nuclear in 2.3 nanoseconds, or if you're a dad and you have a kiddo who's just saying, "Dad, come play with me," and you suddenly find yourself seeing red and all you want to do is turn into Homer Simpson and start choking Bart Simpson, which we don't want to do because that's not a healthy response, then maybe the idea that your relationship with anger and rage isn't an extreme level. If you're someone who feels like you are screaming to be heard and can never be heard, and rage is your response, then perhaps rage is a part of your advocacy. It's how is it showing up to others and how is it being used that might be problematic for you, not the emotion in and of itself. So I would ask you to take a moment to step back. As a coach and therapist, what I would say to folks is, see if you can get into a relationship with your rage. Name it if you have to. See if you can really understand what your rage is trying to tell you. In some of the social media, pop culture kinds of stuff, there's this idea that anger is the part of you that loves you the most and is feeling the most violated by what's going on around you. So by extension, then, rage is the part of you that is the most protective, saying, this is absolutely not okay with me in an extreme way. So I ask you to dialogue with that part of you. See if you can get into a conversation with it. Ask your anger and your rage, what is it seeking whenever it's trying to find some sort of solution? And is the solution that it's finding helpful or harmful in the grand scheme of things? Again, my name is Jack Register, and I'm your host. If you're interested in finding out more about who we are and what we're about, check out my website at jack-register.com. We offer individual and group coaching sessions to be able to talk about issues of anger management and issues of rage. If you're interested in being a part of the podcast, we have a form on the website where you can actually fill it out and tell us a little bit about what's going on. And we'll have a couple conversations with you and then get you scheduled to be on the podcast. I really appreciate your time and attention today, and thanks for being with me. Be well, my friends.